Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Politically Speaking Podcast. I'm your host, Chris McDaniel, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in St. Louis is
Jason Rosenbaum
and
Joe Manis.
Guys, we had some big news this morning.
Yes, and it wasn't here in St. Louis.
It wasn't.
Jefferson City.
All the fun happens in mid-Missouri.
130 miles away.
So yesterday evening, the Missouri Senate overrode the governor on SB 509, the income tax cut.
And the then, exact amount they needed. They got the 23 votes. All 23 Republicans voted for it.
And this morning, the Missouri House got the exact number of votes they needed.
109.
And it's worth pointing out that faithful listeners of Politically Speaking shouldn't be too surprised, because that is what Representative Deal said on our show.
Yes, he was not full of it when he said that.
That's true.
Yes, and a couple interesting things about the vote. The defector is from the St. Louis area, Keith English, a Democrat from Florissant, first term.
Yes, because they needed 109 votes. There are 108 Republicans in the legislature.
So it wasn't Jeff Roeder of Barnhart. It wasn't Ed Schieffer of Troy, although he voted no initially. And it wasn't Penny Hubbard of St. Louis, the people that you would have potentially guessed, since they do defect to Republicans from time to time. It was MMA-loving Keith English. But before we go into the political fallout, Joe, what do you think this means for the state? Because this is going into effect.
Right. Now, a couple things. As our regular listeners may know, the tax cut bill was not going to begin going into effect until 2017. So, and in fact, that was one of the big things the governor talked about last week, because he was saying these people can vote for it and then walk away because of term limits. Most of the people who voted for it today will not be around when it goes into effect. Also, under the law, the cuts don't phase in until each year the state has to have an income increase of at least $150 million. And the tax cut will reduce the percentage that people pay from 6% to 5.5%, and certain types of businesses will see their taxes cut by about 25%. But this is only certain types of businesses, and the governor has pointed out that it's mainly S corporations, which is lobbyists, lawyers, stuff like that, that he says don't generate jobs. Now, the backers have said this was needed to match what was going on in Kansas, although in fairness to Kansas, they've had to raise a bunch of taxes and they've had to make a lot of budget cuts since they cut their tax rate a couple years ago.
But didn't the Kansas taxes happen all at the same time and they were much larger than
this? Correct. Yeah. The Missouri law appears to represent where some people have really looked at what happened in Kansas and they didn't want to duplicate it. So in fairness to the backers, they were very thoughtful in that.
I want to ask a policy question, though, because while this is obviously a political story, which we'll talk about in a minute, I'm just wondering whether a half of a percentage tax cut, especially on individuals, taking the business side out of it, is that going to entice people to move here? I could understand, for example, people moving from Illinois to Florida or Texas where they don't have any income tax. But is a half of a percentage point really going to make a difference?
No. And some would say the reason they did this was in part to make the business tax cuts more palatable. Because many of the backers, their big thing was to try to encourage more business to come to the state. That's their big thing. Now, the governor has pointed out that the bulk of the tax cuts under this provision, when fully into effect, will go to the top 7% of the state's highest earners, income earners. So that is one thing that he has pointed out. Now, there's another interesting angle about this. The tax cuts start right when, if we had done Medicaid expansion, the state's portion would start to go into effect. The federal government covered for the first 3 years, 2014, 2015, and 2016. Even if Missouri does it later, we won't benefit from 2014 because it's done, unless the legislature does something in the next week and a half. Then beginning in 2017, the state's portion would gradually increase, so eventually the state would be paying 10% of the cost. There are some who believe that the tax cut will actually make it more difficult for the state to say that has the money for that portion, and some say that's what the tax cutbackers in some ways had in mind.
Because we'll have less state revenue.
Yeah, because Grover Norquist, who I've covered for decades, who's a major low-tax guru based in D.C., was out here traveling last week with House Speaker Tim Jones. Norquist has said, I'm not going to use his colorful language, but the bottom line is he has contended that the only way to cut spending is to cut revenue. And I, frankly, was in the Post-Dispatch Washington Bureau during the Reagan years, and that was the mantra, was to reduce the amount coming in order to reduce the amount going out. And I covered the budgets many of those years. The problem was the income was reduced, but the spending was not. It was just shifted. So as a result, we had large deficits. At that time, those were the largest deficits that we'd had.
Now, but let's assume that it's like a $620 or $700 million tax cut and not the
$4 billion.
Not the fatal flaw that Nixon said. If this is fully implemented by 2022, won't revenues just naturally increase enough, or inflation will increase enough to where that really isn't that big of a hit to state coffers? I mean, the budget usually goes up several hundred million dollars to many $100 million every year, depending on revenues. Is it possible that this cut won't really cause a big hit, or will it cause a big hit and hurt education and stuff like that?
Well, I don't think that saying that because inflation will occur naturally, as it always does, that doesn't mean that there's a loss in terms of real dollars that are being spent. I mean, that's kind of different.
Yeah.
Now, I think, though, that the school board association, I mean, not school, the Missouri National Education Association and other teacher groups have already come out saying that this is going to hurt education because the cut is going into effect without increasing the foundation formula. The state underfunds the foundation formula, which is the fancy word for the state's basic aid program for public schools. And so they contend that these tax cuts are going to make it more difficult to fully fund it. Now, the chief sponsor of the bill, Will Krause, said this week that he was committed to trying to get it fully funded before these tax cuts actually start. So the next couple of years will be crucial. And in that sense, Governor Nixon will still be governor. So some of this, even though Nixon got a huge hit today, it still, I think, makes him relevant a little bit in that trying to prepare for when these tax cuts go into effect, whether he likes it or not, his administration is going to be caught up in
that. But let's talk about that, because when 253 was not overridden, I mean, I haven't
that's listened, the tax cut bill from last year.
I haven't
year.
Listened to the archives of the show in a while. I remember us saying that that defeat of the override was a huge victory for Nixon. So by that logic, would you say that today's override is a huge defeat for the governor? Because I think it is.
Well, it's a big defeat, but is it long lasting? I think last year's victory shows that these hits sometimes they're not long lasting. It depends on the next battle and how things go with this next with other issues
like Medicaid expansion, which is really what his only other big issue is.
For example, while we're here in the studio, the police are clearing the galleries of the state Senate where Medicaid backers packed the galleries and were shouting and shut down the Senate proceedings until law enforcement could get in and clear them out. So things could get really crazy the next week and a half, and it could affect things down the road.
I mean, with all due respect to the protesters, I don't really think that's going to move the needle on that issue.
No, of course not. They're doing it for effect.
Or publicity, or to get their point across. And I don't mean that disparagingly, but if you look at the Senate's position over the years, I mean, it's going to take a lot more than that. But be that as it may, I think that this override is definitely going to provide some soul searching among Democrats, because for the longest time, they've done very well on statewide elections. And we've talked about this on the show a lot. But they've just done miserably on legislative elections. They've lost Senate seats they frankly shouldn't have lost. And now they didn't even have a supermajority now because there were vacancies, and they were still able to override this veto. And by they, I mean Republicans. It just seems to me that there's now been a lot of talk from people like Chris Koster and Claire McCaskill about how they need to gain numbers in the legislature. If you looked at the filings this year, it didn't really seem like that in some key areas they put up candidates where they could have at least forced Republicans to spend money. I'm just not – this may be a wake-up call, and if it isn't, I'm not really sure what else can be that they have to take this seriously.
Well, I think it does show, and you and I have talked about this before, that numbers matter, and because of redistricting, and one can get into an esoteric debate about what happened, but the result is the Republicans definitely benefited, and the Democrats have really failed to get a coordinated effort together to at least keep the Republican numbers below this override majority. I mean, I remember when Republicans took control of the House after the 2002 election.
Yeah, they had like 90.
Yeah, it was like 90 or 99. It was something like that. And people were like euphoric. They couldn't believe they had such huge numbers. Well, that's 10 less than what they have now, or roughly. So I think that I think you're absolutely right. The Democrats really have to get their act together for this fall. I know I've written about this, that they are putting all their money in control of the state party as opposed to having these wings, the House wings and the Senate wings to run campaigns. Now, the Republicans are keeping that old format. So, but the issue is that apparently certain party leaders, and I'm assuming not just Roy Temple, but maybe Chris Koster and others, are going to have tight control over what money goes out for these legislative races this fall. And I think their work is definitely cut out for them, and they're going to have to, like you say, is target stuff. And Jason brought up before we went on the air, I want you to talk about this, is about Keith English, the defector.
Yeah, and I said this on Twitter, and I think that, you know,
the Democrat from Florida.
This is absolutely crucial here. I think that we as reporters tend to spend probably a little bit more time on general elections than primaries, although I think us three spent a lot of time in 2012 covering
because
primaries.
Because we're junkies.
But I think this really shows that whoever wins some of these intra-party battles in safe districts matter, because Keith English upended an incumbent state rep, Bert Atkins, in 2012 after redistricting. And had that gone a different route, you could make a solid argument that this vote would have gone a different way since he was the deciding vote. Now, maybe they could have found somebody else, or maybe in this parallel universe, somebody else would have been elected who'd been voting with Republicans. But this is an instance where when people say, you know, whoever wins this super Democratic seat or super Republican seat, you know, it doesn't matter. They're just going to vote with the Democrats or Republicans. Not always the case. Definitely not the case in this situation. And, you know, there was talk after this, at least on Twitter or maybe in the minds of political people, what's going to be the repercussions to Keith English? Because as I'm sure both of you know, when Penny Hubbard voted on what I believe was a lieutenant governor succession bill, Jake Hummel basically kicked her off all the committees. And she was eventually reinstated in all the committees by Speaker Jones. But that kind of was one thing. And I just got this statement from basically all of Democratic leadership in the House that says, and I quote, "House Democrats are disappointed one of our own provided the final vote needed to override the governor. Representative English had been a valued colleague whom House Democrats could trust to support us when it mattered most. That apparently is no longer the case."
Had.
Yes. So you wonder what the – I mean, obviously, he's not stupid. He's a first-termer, but he's got to realize that his – career with the Democrats is toast. So does English switch parties? Has English...
No, because if he did that, he would lose re-election. But continue.
But, well, I mean, I'm just playing theory here.
But here's the thing.
But the Democrats aren't going to help him if... Has he been...
He's not facing a Democratic primary this cycle, and his district is heavily Democratic. So his chances of winning re-election, I think, are very high, which means that there is essentially no leverage for him to do anything.
Very good point.
So, you know, I don't really know
what was he promised?
I mean, that was asked, I think, by some reporters, and Deal and Jones both said nothing. So my point being that, you know, this cycle at least, he's not going to really likely face any repercussions unless a Republican beats them or an independent candidate comes and beats him. I'm not really sure there's anything the Democrats can do besides be angry with him at this point. Though if he tries to run for something else or he tries to run for re-election in 16, that's when they may strike back at him.
Does it show – theory question for you guys. Does this show lack a Democratic discipline? Here the Republicans had almost twice as many. And last year they had problems with defectors, about 15 for the previous tax cut bill. This time they had none. So they had a much more tightly control. And in the Senate, the Republicans needed all the votes, every vote that they had, and they got them. So the Republican discipline was much better in both chambers. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that it reflects on Nixon's sort of hands-off approach to the legislature. I mean, he doesn't have the relationships that a lot of others – that a lot of other governors would cultivate. Now, you know, you could also say that Nixon did throw out a tax cut proposal –
in January.
But which, of course, didn't get any traction. But and you know, maybe this is partially because of term limits, because there's more turnover. But if Nixon had a better relationship with all of these individual lawmakers, there would have been fewer defections.
I don't know. I mean, this is one defection in the Democratic caucus. So it's hard.
But there aren't that many of them.
That's true.
Yeah, but they only needed one.
And there are going to be other instances where Republicans aren't united. I think last week's show,
Right to Work was the big one.
I brought up the prospect of the transfer bill of all the Republicans voting for it and some Democrats voting for it, and that didn't happen yet. There's still legislative machinations that could happen that could change the outcome. But I think there'll be instances where Republicans are still divided over stuff like Right to Work, as you mentioned. But in this instance, I mean, the Republican leadership obviously learned from the mistakes of last year. They crafted a bill that I guess all the people who were skeptical about it were comfortable with, and now they've won a pretty substantial political victory and, you know, passed a bill that will have serious policy ramifications.
Now does this embolden the Republicans for other issues going into the last week and a half, since they had this such a key victory here?
Well,
I don't know what other key issues there are.
Photo ID.
That's true.
Which we will hear about in a minute.
Yes,
from
actually, that segues to us, because we should get into that right now.
We should stop yammering and start introducing our guests.
Yes, yes. And we do need to make clear to our listeners that Senator Jamila Nasheed, who was our guest today, actually we recorded the show the day before the override, so she was making some predictions that actually turned out to be true.
And obviously, this is another repeat guest. We've had her very early on in our guest format, but she does represent a significant chunk of the city of St. Louis, and I would say she's a pretty significant Democratic player in the Senate.
Yes, no question.
So we recorded this after the Senate voted on the income tax cut bill yesterday. Jason was not there. He was taking care of a sick child.
Yes. So I apologize to the senator for not being there, but I'm sure that you guys did a tremendous job without me.
Well, we'll be right back.
Well, you know, Chris, this is a very, very sad day for the state of Missouri. What the Senate just did, meaning the majority party, Republicans, they just reduced the state revenue by $620 million. You know, that is appalling. When what you have just had the opportunity to see was an attack on higher ed, K through 12, Medicaid recipients, the seniors, and all of those individuals that rely on the general revenue to live day by day. It is very, very unfortunate that the Republicans took that step to reduce $620 million from the general revenue. 97% of all individual income taxes will be reduced. We don't have a problem here with high taxes. You know, we probably have one of the lowest tax base in the nation. And for, you know, the Republicans to take revenue and give it to the rich and take from the poor, it's something that I cannot even figure out why.
Now, have you heard whether or not the House will have the necessary 109 votes, or what are you hearing?
Because they will need one Democrat if they're going
to actually, I'm hearing that they will have 110 votes.
Really?
They will have 110 votes, and I don't know who those two Democrats are, but I would say this here. That is not a Democratic issue. I mean, the philosophical views when it comes to taxes, it's clear. We have a line in the sand, and I don't think that no Democrat should cross that line and reduce the revenue that is most definitely needed for those individual citizens here in the state of Missouri that cannot really fend for themselves. Missouri has the lowest per capita in the nation and the only state in the region to receive an A for our tax climate. We have no problem with high taxes.
Were you surprised at all that they went about this going for the override during the session as opposed to passing the bill and then coming back in September during veto session? And why do you think they did that?
Because they're desperate to get something done. They are desperate to push their right-wing agenda.
What they wanted to do
was shove it down our throats. But let me just say this, Joe. Hopefully, the act that occurred today in the Senate would only galvanize the Democratic Party and not just galvanize, energize them and make them really understand that we're going to have to do something to take the House back or the Senate.
Now
we're going to have to reduce those numbers on the Republican side.
Now, at this point, you mentioned that there may be 110 votes, which would be two Democrats, and you don't have any idea who those would be. Is there any thought about whether or not this override effort is going to affect other legislation as far as how people approach other legislation, either because they're upset or happy or whatever?
Well, I think that it's going to strengthen the Republicans' resolve to get their agendas through within the next 2 weeks. I know that they have voter ID on the calendar. What I'm hearing is that they're looking to go far as calling for a PQ, totally disrupting the decorum of the Senate.
Now, that's previous question. That's a way to bust a filibuster.
Yes, and that's something that we don't do often in the Senate. The last PQ was in 2007. So this would be one that I'm thinking that they're willing to go for, meaning the voter ID, because they really want to get it done. And I just don't understand the logic behind it. I know that they're carrying Alex water. When you have no signs here in the state of Missouri of voter impersonation. Not one person was caught impersonating a person at the poll.
So I
just don't understand their logic and their rationale behind all of these disgusting pieces of legislation that they're putting forth.
So while we're on the topic of this photo ID for voting, Joe, why don't you explain that bill for us? Because Missouri currently does have voter ID as a requirement, right?
Correct. Missouri does have voter ID. You have to show some sort of identification, preferably with your signature, or a utility bill.
Bank statement.
Bank statement, something that shows that you definitely live at that address. What Missouri doesn't have is a photo ID requirement. There was an attempt in 2006 that actually got through the General Assembly but was tossed out by the courts because of Missouri's state constitution. What they're trying to do now is put a proposal on the ballot to change the constitution to allow a photo ID requirement. Now, one of the debates has been that the proposed requirement that they are expected to press for would only allow a limited number of photo IDs. It would only allow, like, driver's licenses, military IDs. That's about it.
Would it allow student IDs?
And Joe, no.
No.
Joe, so no one has a problem with voter ID. Everyone should have a voter ID, okay? But the fact of the matter is, what you're saying to the citizens of the state of Missouri is that if your ID is expired, you cannot vote. Now tell me, what does that have to do with me being that person on the ID? What does an expired driver's license has to do with me being that individual?
See, because they're just for explaining for our listeners, they've estimated that there's several tens of thousands of people in Missouri who use expired driver's licenses mm-hmm. to vote. Many of them are elderly who no longer have driver's licenses, and they don't drive anymore, but they use those expired licenses to vote. Now, what the state has said is that they'll provide a free photo ID, but the problem is you would have to provide birth certificate or a passport or something in order to get that. And to get those documents can cost money if you don't have...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so basically what you're doing is you are literally associating a poll tax with the rights to vote.
So at this point, you're mentioning that they may be pushing for the previous question if necessary, if there's a Democratic filibuster to try to block it.
Oh, there will be a Democratic filibuster. This is one that I will not stand down on. People have fought hard and long to have the right to vote. And again, this is not just about a voter ID. Everyone should have a voter ID. However, to restrict the type of IDs, there comes the problem. I mean, a student should be able to use his or her student ID.
And at least right now, I mean, they have not put out a bill of what exactly they would require or not require, but based on what they previously had approved mm-hmm. and what they're talking about, the conventional wisdom is that they will not allow student IDs.
Absolutely.
Senator, what do you think is the impetus behind this? What do you think? Why do you think Republicans are pushing so hard for this?
You know, that's a good question. It's a systematic move throughout the states. Here in the United States. I mean, this is going on everywhere. And what is happening right now, the Republicans are afraid of losing power. They saw a major increase of voters that came out in the 2008 election. And many of the Republicans were outvoted. So they see that it's a surge in voter participation within the Democratic Party. And what they're trying to do is push that back.
So at this point, when do you think it's going to come up? I mean, that right now it's for our listeners, we're doing this on Monday afternoon. So at this point...
There's a possibility that we can see voter ID come up probably Wednesday or even tomorrow.
Okay. Now, what about right to work, which is another one that's been kind of in the bans because the House has been unable to find the four votes needed to send it over to the Senate. That's the bill that would bar employers and unions from requiring all workers to pay dues if a majority vote to join a union. At this point,
I'm
what are you hearing about that?
Joe, I'm predicting that that bill is dead. I cannot see that bill passing within the next 2 weeks, which is a good thing. We have a lot of friends on the Republican side that's friendly to the union movement. And they are willing, ready, and able to hold the line and say, no, we're not going to make this state a right-to-work state. So we have friends on the other side. And I can tell you, Jeff Ibusi, I mean, he has worked extremely hard to bring a bipartisan movement to block the right to work bill.
Now, the governors, you know, have been campaigning against the tax cut bill the last week or so, and has been throwing, you know, has had experts come out and say that they're citing this provision that they say would actually eliminate all income taxes on any income over $9,000. Which would eliminate about two-thirds of the state's general revenue. I know the Republicans are saying that that's incorrect, that they're taking that sentence out of context. My question is the governor's campaigning to try to persuade the General Assembly to stick with him. Obviously, it didn't work with the Senate. Is it helping or hurting the effort if it's like you say that there's at least two Democrats willing to defect in the House?
Well, you know, just like the whole Medicaid battle here in the state of Missouri, I think when the governor came out against the Medicaid, came out in support of Medicaid, then you had more pushback coming from the Republicans. The same way here, right now, the 15 representatives last time that voted to sustain the governor's veto, they're not going to do it again.
And no, these are Republicans, just so
Republicans, correct. And they're not going to do it again. And I believe that it's simply because they truly believe that the governor's pushing his own agenda.
So why would any Democrats defect? What are you hearing that might be the reasons?
I'm not sure. I don't know if it's politics. I don't know if individuals are being offered. I don't know. I'm not sure. I cannot answer that question.
Okay.
So we've talked a little bit about how a lot of the efforts with what is left of this session or on the Democratic side is going to be holding up voter ID. What are some of the other things that the Democrats are going to be focusing on here?
I think you're going to see paycheck protection. It's going to be another battle that I'm sure the Democrats are already willing and able to battle the Republicans on.
Now, just so our listeners know, that would bar payroll deduction of union dues.
That's right. That's what it will do. So basically what we in this state, in terms of the Republicans, they have an all-out war going on with the unions right now. I mean, they want to weaken the working-class Missourians in a way that we have never seen. And so what they're saying is that you don't have to pay your dues. That way, the unions won't have the abilities to go out and campaign and push their candidates in a way that can take them to the next level in terms of power. So what they're trying to do is weaken the union base with the paycheck protection bill. That's going to be one that they may have to PQ as well, because I don't want to believe that the unions was, I mean, that the Republicans, I'm sorry, the Democrats will stand down on that.
Okay, now what other issues do you think are going to come up? What about Medicaid?
You have 72-hour waiting period,
right,
where they're basically saying that if you get pregnant and you want to have an abortion, then you're going to have to wait 72 hours. Okay, well, what about that little 14-year-old girl who father raped her and her mom wants her to have an abortion? Why should she have to wait 72 hours? Why should she have to be inflicted with the mental abuse and the pain that comes with having an abortion? Why can't she just go ahead and have her abortion?
Senator, you've brought up two things that you think might bring about a PQ. Why do you think that there would be a resurgence this session of a PQ, which is pretty rarely invoked?
It's the election. It's the election year. And the Republicans feel that if we have the majority, then we should be able to push through our white right-wing agenda. That's the way they feel. Why are we in control and we can't get what we want done? So they're saying that if we have to go to the extreme to get it done, then that's what we will do.
Okay. Is there any other bills that we should mention that might come up in the last 2 weeks? I knew that there were some amendments.
The tobacco bill is on the agenda.
Oh, really?
What, okay. I'm sorry. Can you say that one more time?
It's on the calendar. It is on the calendar.
The tobacco bill to fix the loophole.
Yeah.
Joe, why don't you explain that loophole? Because you've been reporting on this for a while.
Yeah, and I'm trying to finish up something on it, too. But basically, the bottom line is, in the tobacco settlement, which was in 1998, Missouri was among a number of states that cut a deal with the major tobacco companies, and part of that was the tobacco companies made payments to these states to cover the costs of the added health costs because of their smokers. But part of this was that they were to – the states were to eliminate any perceived advantage that small cigarette owners, sellers would have. Well, over the course of this, I'm simplifying it, but the bottom line is Missouri is the only state that has not passed legislation to fix that loophole. It's a bipartisan thing. The state initially thought it was going to lose $70 million this year, but a judge tossed out part of that loss, so right now they're going to get about $50 million of it back, but it's still the state could face more loss in future years. This is one of the rare cases where you actually have Republicans and Democrats on the same side of possibly trying to fix it.
Right, but then you still have the small tobacco companies.
Correct.
They're saying, look, why should we have to pay into this?
Right, right. So they're getting a lot of pressure from small tobacco companies, some of which have very well-connected lawyers.
All right. Well, Senator, thanks for joining us this week. To close us out here, you can read all of our stories at stlpublicradio.org. You can follow me on Twitter at C.S. McDaniel. Even though he's not here right now, you can follow Jason on Twitter at J. Rosenbaum. Joe, you can be followed on Twitter
at J. Manis, and that's J-M-A-N-N-I-E-S.
And Senator, you can be followed on Twitter as well.
Yes, at Senator Nasheed.
Well, thank you very much. We'll be back next week. Until then, so long.